Go for it.
All right. Good evening. I would like to call this online public meeting of the Clark County Commission on Aging to order. It is December 16th, 2020. My name is Chuck Green. I am the commission chair. You should be able to see tonight's meeting agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen, I will be announcing the agenda items as we move through the meeting topics. Due to COVID-19, meetings of the Clark County Commission on Aging will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizen interested in attending. Members of the public have joined as an attendee, which means you can see and hear the event if you join via computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event if you join by phone. And again, I'll be announcing agenda items as they come in. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by the commission chair or staff and are unmuted. Before we get opportunities for you to provide comment, we'll have a short announcement of how that works and how you can join. So I'm going to start with a roll call of commission members who are present for this meeting. Commission members, please say I'm here or otherwise acknowledge your presence after I call your name. And then please don't forget to mute yourself after you are done telling me that you're here. First, Amy Gross. Amy, you here? Did we lose Amy? Well, I think we will come back. So I think Amy was here and we've lost her. Franklin Johnson.
Here.
Megan McCarthy. Megan here. Megan, I see you. Can you announce? I think Megan's having audio issues, but I see that she is here. Linda O'Leary?
Here.
Tanya Stewart?
Here.
Pam Wheeler?
Here.
Larry Smith?
I am present.
And myself, I am here. Did we get to manage to get Amy back? Oh, okay. I wonder, because I know she was under the weather, so we might not be getting Amy back. Do I have a motion to excuse Nancy Dung, who could not, had a conflict come up and could not attend, and Amy Gross, who we know was under the weather?
I still move.
Second.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, our two missing members are excused. This evening's agenda is planned as follows. Approval of the agenda, which we'll be taking action on momentarily. Approval of the November 18th meeting notes. Recognition of David Kelly of the Area Agency, or excuse me, the Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. We've moved a general public comment period up and early. Communications and announcements. Update from our Clark County Public Health Director, Chief Health Officer, Dr. Alan Melnick. Then we have presentations from CDM Caregiving Services, Columbia River Mental Health, and United Healthcare on impacts of isolation and socialization at older adults during COVID-19. A meeting debrief, and then we will adjourn. Do I have any requested changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, do I have a motion to accept and approve the agenda as read?
So moved.
Good.
Second.
All right, moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the tonight's agenda, say aye.
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 All those opposed? Abstentions? Okay, our agenda is approved. Now, it is my honor to move to our next item, which is to recognize David Kelly, Executive Director on the Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington, as he is retiring at the end of the year. And I'm going to read a proclamation. Whereas the mission of the Clark County Commission on Aging is to provide leadership, advocacy, community awareness, and partnerships to initiate change toward an all-age-friendly, livable community. And whereas the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington provides access for older adults, adults with disabilities, and families to have access to information about home and community-based services to help them thrive in the setting of their choice. And whereas the AAADSW, say that 10 times fast, as an active partner of the Commission on Aging, promotes independence, choice, well-being, and dignity for older adults. And whereas David Kelly has served as the Executive Director of the AAADSW for the past 12 years. And whereas the Commission on Aging owes its existence to the hard work of those involved with the creation of the Aging Readiness Plan, including David Kelly. And whereas David Kelly will be retiring on December 31st, 2020. Now, therefore, the Commission on Aging issues this proclamation to show our recognition of and gratitude for Mr. Kelly for all of his hard work and support for older adults in Southwest Washington. In Clark County, Washington, to recognize Mr. David Kelly for his distinguished and exemplary service supporting the Commission on Aging and Older Adults of Southwest Washington, dated the 16th day of December, 2020. I'd like to ask if there's any comments that fellow commissioners would like to make.
Chuck, I have a comment.
Yes, Larry.
David, I just want to thank you for all your good work, especially when I was a member of City Council for 12 years. Working with you was just super. Your involvement in your community and all that you have done to make this community better, I appreciate very much, and I just want to personally thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Hi, David. I'd like to thank you also for the service you've provided to our community. The exemplary staff that you have under your tutelage, they are awesome. And I've always enjoyed and learned something from being on the a participant sometimes on the advisory council so that we could hear about joint projects or just things that you're doing. I'm always amazed at the amount of projects and things that you're doing over there. I don't think everybody knows, but thank you and enjoy your retirement.
Thank you, Linda.
Anybody else wish to say anything? Do I have a motion to adopt this proclamation and have me sign it on behalf of the commission and send it to Mr. Kelly?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Abstentions? It is approved. David Kelly, thank you very much for your time, and we'd like to offer you a chance to say a few words.
Well, thank you very much. Jackie, did you have something to say?
I just wanted to say thank you, Dave, for all the years of your support. Dave was with us at the very beginning, was the you know, champion of getting the Aging Readiness Task Force together with Commissioner Bolt at the time, and working with our department community planning hand in hand on that effort to get that Aging Readiness Plan. And they were with us. We had, you know, big 100-person workshops pretty much every other month or every couple of months. And also subcommittees, and Dave was involved in every step of it. And I just want to say thank you. You'll be missed, and congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. And then Chairman Green, I welcome the opportunity to say a couple of brief words. But my first words are thank you to the Clark County Commission on Aging. You guys all of you do, the commission members are volunteers, and I just love the spirit of your volunteerism, and I love what you do for the community. And please know that it's noted by so many people. You're incredible. You're awesome. It's a great honor to see all the good work you're doing over the years, both your predecessors and you currently. So please know that you're highly valued in this community. And I, from my perspective, I think you're doing a great job, and I really appreciate you. I will tell you that sometimes in the I worked at the City of Vancouver years ago, and in the field of public health, and I'm extremely proud to have finished my career 12 years working in aging and with adults living with a disability in that work, in that arena, and all of us do particular things. All the agencies do particular things. And I'm so proud of Clark County stepping up and doing what they have done. And I'm so proud of each of you for volunteering. And I'm really proud to have led the organization. The mention of our staff, it's just remarkable. I've had the honor of working shoulder to shoulder with staff who just roll up their sleeve and tell me day in and day out that they just love their work, and it's dynamic to be of service to the clients that we serve. We're in an industry you can never do everything that you could possibly do, but I'm very proud of what we do do and to the best of our abilities, and I've been honored to be a part of this. I was honored to be a part of the energy that Jackie and others led to put the Clark County Commission on Aging together. And it's a great tribute to me to receive this proclamation. I'm going to tell my grandkids about this. I'll tell you that. I got 8 of them. They're all going to hear about it. Your grandpa has a proclamation, for crying out loud. I really am honored, and I thank you immensely.
Well, and I have to tell you, my my wife is doing caregiving for a 72-year-old woman from church, and that's been a challenge. But she's finding that the Agency on Aging and Disabilities has been very helpful in communicating and hooking up with some of the services that she needs and has needed, especially during this COVID era. It's been a struggle and a challenge, and she's been successful helping Ann get through this. And as we talk about isolation, that's definitely an issue, but access to services has been a big deal. So thank you for you and your staff. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chuck. Appreciate it very much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
I'm interested in the rest of the agenda, but well, if it's okay with you, I'm gonna back out and then call in and just listen in to the rest of the agenda. You don't need to look at my mug anymore. It's painful enough for you.
We're about ready to enter public comments. You're welcome to join that part. All right, thank you.
All right, take care. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that. Jackie, you want to bring up the agenda? So, so now we are entering early this time our general public comment. Jackie or Jenna, I'm not sure who, will provide instructions on how to make public comment for those joining us from their computer or mobile device, and how, if you're joining by phone, how you can do so. So I'm going to turn this over to staff to talk through how you can join and give us some input.
Good afternoon, everybody, or early evening. For attendees using their computer or WebEx application,
And if you'd like to speak, please utilize the raised hand icon that you can see on the slide. It's a tiny little hand, but it's there. You might need to click on the participant button in order for it to appear. So once you find that, select the hand and we'll know that you would like to make a comment. For attendees using the telephone only, you need to press *3 on your phone's number panel to raise your hand. So that is if you have just called in by phone and not used a WebEx or internet application. When you call in, you'll hear a message that tells you you have raised your hand to ask a question. Please wait to speak until the host calls on you. And when we are ready to acknowledge you, we'll unmute you and you'll hear a message that says you have been unmuted. Okay, does anyone have any questions or would like to make comment to the commission?
I am not seeing any hands. Do you see any hands?
No, I do not.
All right. Well, thank you. And there will be another opportunity for some comment a little later after our speakers have presented. So wanted to bring up the communications from our fellow commissioners, announcements of upcoming events. And so we have two events that we're working on. One is our January mini retreat. We typically have one big retreat in the middle of the year. This has been a different year for us. So we are having a retreat in January. It's not a regular meeting of the Commission on Aging, but we will be definitely be discussing some things like what are we going to be doing for the next few months in the year. And then we're getting ready for the annual joint Commission on Aging County Council meeting, which is scheduled for February 17th. So I'm going to open it up at this point. Are there fellow commissioners who have updates from their various liaison meetings or other events or opportunities to talk about? And I'm not seeing any updates. So, all right. So, I just have a couple of things. One is just to let everybody know that that WashDOT is currently hosting a Human Services Transportation Plan online open house for the next, next few, 6 days. There is it's open to those who want to discourse in English, Spanish, and Russian. The opportunity to learn about statewide human services transportation plan and how ideas from the community can help shape and draft that plan, help WASHA identify and confirm gaps and barriers for people, and share their experiences with human services transportation. There is a link, and I believe we can put that, we might be able to share that, Jackie, or put it on our website for those who might want to take advantage of that online opportunity. The other thing I wanted to mention is I did, our Silver Citizen Award member has definitely been engaging with us since we gave her the award last month. And one of the topics she would like us to address at some point in the future, especially in the COVID-19 era, is long-term care. Now that the CARES Act is kind of running out, we're waiting to see if Congress does some follow-up with that. But one of the issues with that is, especially if you've been receiving hospital care, what happens after you get out of the hospital, especially if you have ongoing COVID-related health and care needs. And so that's something that she would like us to consider and maybe have a discussion and come up with some opportunities for help out of that process. So we're still 10 minutes out from Dr. Melnick joining us, and I don't think he's is he on?
No, but it looks like Tanya might have an update.
All right.
Yeah, Tanya. Sorry. I wasn't fast enough, Chuck. Sorry about that delay.
All right.
I have an update. Nancy and I attended the ADRN meeting. Mm-hmm. It was my first meeting, exceptionally well run. The topics for that day, they reviewed a variety of different resources that are available in the community. I have a set of links that I've sent out to Jackie to kind of pass along. Jackie and Jenna, they had two speakers. One speaker was Veronica Marty with CTRAN, and she just went over some of the different programs, two different programs that are senior focused, but not exclusive for seniors, the C-VAN. And then she talked about the travel train, if that makes sense. So the travel trainers. And so I took a lot of notes just on some of those resources, links. If there's interest in learning a bit more, I'm happy to meet with anybody about that. The second speaker was very interesting from my perspective as well, Breanne Swanson. She spoke about telemedicine and access, a study that they're doing with improving access to telemedicine for some folks that are really struggling from a healthcare perspective, getting access to healthcare. The study is going to be pretty small, and it's a pretty tight time frame. I think they're shooting to see about 2 patients per week, and they're focused on folks who have Medicare. So if folks want more detail on that, I'm happy to pass that along, and I've got contact information. And again, like I said, they shared a significant number of really useful links that might be of interest. But that's my update. I wish Nancy was here to see if I missed anything. Questions?
I used to work with Veronica when I worked at CTRAN, so very good at helping make sure that people know of their C-VAN and travel opportunities, get trained on it. And actually, as they found out, there's a lot of people who want to be trainers. A little challenging nowadays, but definitely is something that CTRAN is very capable, and Veronica is very capable herself of providing that service.
And I have a quick follow-up. I'm going to be meeting with Breanne just to learn a little bit more about the telemedicine pilot. I had suggested that there might be an opportunity to see if there's some Medicare Advantage partnership opportunities there. So we're going to explore that a little bit. So that's it. That's my update.
All right. Thank you. Larry, did you have an update? I see your hand. There you go. Okay. You got your hand up, so I didn't know.
Thanks.
Hey, I do have a question for you, though, before Dr. Melnick shows up. Now, Meals on Wheels is doing kind of this Dial a Senior program. Have you been involved with that, or have you been tracking how that's working out?
You mean, Chuck?
Yes.
Oh, okay. As far as I know, fine. I get my information from the Lupke Center, it's really valuable because you find out what their needs are. As many of these seniors they're calling up are, you know, self-efficient. They don't like to ask for help. So it's been valuable. They've had a lot of volunteers. So they've been able to fill the volunteer list of making sure that folks get telephone calls and so forth. So as far as I know, worked extremely well. There's other organizations that have adopted it as well. And I think it's especially now during the Christmas holiday period and the caution being put out that many of these seniors out there cannot see their grandkids or their families. I've been told to certainly isolate through the Christmas season. This is going to be a very difficult time for many of them out there. But as far as I know, it's going very well.
Hey, thank you. So I didn't want to get us into a presentation because I know when Dr. Melnick arrives, he's very busy given what's going on right now with COVID and the vaccines. So that any other comments or communications from the commission before we move on? And Jackie, I'm going to turn to you. I don't know how Dr. Melnick's going to arrive. Is he going to be a panelist or is he going to be?
He should be joining as a panelist. We're expecting him at 5, but depending on what's going on with him today, I don't know if it could be after 5. So we can, couple options. I see that we have some of the service providers in our, that's joining our meeting as attendees. I didn't know if maybe anyone of them may have an update or some resources or something they want to share regarding what's going on in their world, if they would like to take the opportunity to share any resource or holiday resources that might be helpful for the community. I'd invite anyone to raise their hand that we can give you all the floor. Oh, we got Christina. All right, I'm going to unmute you, Christina.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
So I just want to call attention that we do have our COVID resource page on our helpingelders.org website. And so that gets updated routinely with any new resources that are available. So today I just posted the link to Department on Health, information about the vaccines. There's also a resource list there for holidays, just helping folks to connect to things around food insecurity or any special holiday events. As you can imagine, they're pretty limited this year. There's also some really wonderful newsletters there. We have one for family caregivers, one for our kinship caregivers, and then one for emotional wellness. But there's a number of resources, so I'm happy to email that link out to you all if you would find that helpful.
Yes.
That would be great. Thank you, Christina. And if there's anything that we can specifically post on our website too, Christina, just let me know and I'll get that up as well.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. Anyone else in our audience? Okay. Well, with Dr. Melnick not here yet, do you want to go ahead and just start our first presentation? And if he joins, we'll have him go after that.
Yes. I don't want to keep him waiting too long. I know how extremely busy he is this week. So why don't we do that? And Lisa, you're on first. So just if we do find that Dr. Melnick is on, I may need to give you a high sign of some type. But why don't we move into our first presentation? So we will. Because of the time, might see if we have any time for commission members after each of our presentations to ask questions. And then after all the presentations, we'll have another opportunity for the public to weigh in, ask questions, and make comments. So please make sure you jot down your questions now as the speakers present so we can ask them when we open up questions from the audience. Our first presenter is Lisa Capilotto. She's Development Director of CDM Caregiving Services. And with that, Lisa, take it away.
Awesome. Thank you, Chuck, very much. And before I go into my presentation, at CDM, we also would like to congratulate and honor David Kelly for all of his years of service. I know David has been a great friend of CDM's, and so we offer our congratulations and warm wishes to him as well. So thank you again for having us here. If we can go back, there we go, perfect. As Chuck said, I am the development director with CDM. I have actually worked with CDM since 2011, first as their consultant and then most recently as their development director. So CDM has been near and dear to my heart for many years, which is awesome. The slide you're looking at now is our CDM Caregiving Services McKibben Center. This building opened in 2018, which was significant because it took us away from having to pay rent for our adult day center, all of our admin staff, et cetera, which was successfully done through a capital campaign committee. So the state-of-the-art facility provides place of belonging to seniors and adults with disabilities while also offering respite for their caregivers, another very important aspect. However, as a result of COVID-19, this facility has been closed since March of 2020, and of course will remain so until it's safe to reopen. And Jackie, next slide, please. So we want to talk about isolation today, which is just in itself, it's a scary word. It can cause so much damage. We know high blood pressure, any Google search will tell you that isolation can cause all of these things listed to the right of the screen there. High blood pressure, heart disease, obesity, anxiety, depression, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, and of course, even death. Not fun to think about. Our clients can suffer any one of these. And in a normal world, when they're with us at the Adult Day Center, we would see it firsthand and then take immediate actions to adjust for that client. Slide three, please. So the next question then is how would we adjust for the client? And can we get slide three, please? Sorry.
Sorry.
No worries.
There we go.
Thank you. So we know that there are some key activities that can be used to prevent and even reverse the effects of isolation. And so this is what we kind of use as a guideline in the Adult Day Center. Socialization, we need to make sure our clients and the elderly disabled stay actively engaged. I love that word, actively, because that's a very common buzzword that's being used these days. Dining with others is an important thing. Exercise, always, there's that nasty word again for all of us, but it is extremely important. Pets also help maintain, and then maintain your health through regular doctor's visits. So how do we make sure that all of that happens with our clients? I'll take you through a couple of demonstrations here. So if we can move to slide four, please. Socialization is the first thing that we want to talk about because it's just a basic need that every human has. And even non-humans, I know our doggies and puppies and animals all need interaction with other beings. And so what you're looking at here is life at the Adult Day Center. These two gentlemen have taken amongst themselves to be friends and look forward to seeing one another each weekday that they are at the center. Every morning, socialization opens at the Adult Day Center. First thing, 8 a.m. Monday morning. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, we're there for socialization and a whole host of other activities. So what do we do since our day center is closed? Where do those 60 plus clients go? They don't have anywhere to go. They instead look to us to help bring socialization to them. So we're doing that by we're essentially bringing our Adult Day Center online in the best way that we possibly can, but it's certainly not easy. So we start our days 9 o'clock with 8 o'clock. We still start at 8 a.m. with social time. And we find that even if we log on a couple minutes early, that we have clients, they're already waiting. They're already logged on and they're waiting for us because they can't wait to see their friends and they can't wait to talk about what people are doing and how they're feeling, et cetera. So socialization is huge to keep isolation at bay. We also have a registered nurse who is part of staff at CDM at the Adult Day Center, who on a daily basis is reaching out to our clients of the day center, especially those that have medical issues. She wants to make sure and check with them, since she can't do it in person, how they are doing and how they're getting along. Do they need additional help? So just that little bit of contact with them is helpful for them. Can we move to slide 5, please? Another way to keep isolation at bay is to make sure you stay actively engaged in your favorite hobbies and activities. Here in this slide, you see on the right, one of our adult day center clients taking part in one of his favorite activities, which is art. The picture on the left is one of our clients fishing, and her caregiver was able to provide her with an opportunity to go fishing, which was something she dearly loved to do, as one of her last wishes. And so she was able to have that granted before she left us. Today, how do we bring services for art therapy, music therapy, etc., online? Well, just last week, we ended up having over 20 Spark boxes delivered to our clients at their homes, so that then upon tuning into the online program, they then can go through the art project that was delivered to them, and they were thrilled. It was absolutely amazing how happy they were to receive this little gift from us, so that they can continue to stay engaged with whatever it is that they are enjoying. In this case, it happened to have been art. Slide 6, please. So dining with others, I think that our parents always try to teach us that, okay, you sit at the table, make sure you look one another in the eye, don't have the TV on, don't have your phone in front of you, a book, etc. Dining with others is a huge step in keeping oneself happy and healthy. It keeps our minds engaged all the while we're consuming some healthy and nutritious food, hopefully anyways. So the picture you're seeing here is at the ADC at lunchtime, and you can see that the day center has quite a few people in there, which is, I always find this to be awesome, because we do put out a monthly calendar that shows the clients what we're serving on each particular day. So some days, kind of like, let's say pizza happens to be a favorite day, we'll find more clients that come to the center that day. And it just cracks me up, because it always reminds me of my children when they were in elementary school, and they wanted to make sure that they went to school and bought lunch that day, because that was their favorite food. How do we do this virtually? We really can't. So all we can do is really try and stay in communication with our clients. So that's where we look to folks like Larry, and we look to the folks at Meals on Wheels to help our clients at least ensure that they get a healthy meal. Slide 7, please. So as we age, exercise, another crazy word that we all just love or hate, it becomes even more valuable for optimal health. The things that we used to take for granted, walking upright, keeping our balance, just standing up from a seated position, all those things are so important to do as you age. And some of our clients come to us at the day center specifically for the exercise and the exercise machines. You can see in the picture here that they're new step elliptical machines. These machines are specially designed for those with mobility issues or ambulatory issues. The seats turn, it's easy to transfer one from a wheelchair into a machine so that they can get some exercise. Today, offering exercise programs online through our online day center, we are doing that. We have even brought some of our weight sets or exercise bands to our clients so that they can do resistance training from home online. Next slide, please. Having a pet in your life is an absolute perfect option for as long as you have the wherewithal to care for a pet. And I'll get into that statement in just a second. We know that having a pet in your life can really give somebody a sense of purpose. You are there, the pet needs you to feed them, the pet needs you to clean them, take them outside for exercise, for potty breaks, etc. Sometimes that pet in our client's home is the only other living thing, the only other thing with a heartbeat other than the client. Pets can add so much value to one's life. Sometimes, however, some of our clients are to the point where they can no longer care for a pet, or it would be too much responsibility for them. So somebody has ingeniously invented these robotic animals. And the picture on the right here is one of our clients actually snuggling with our robotic kitty. This robotic kitty actually purrs, turns its head and looks at you, and does a world of difference for this gentleman who really thinks that this cat is real. So much so that the last time I was going to take it out on the road to show folks what it was like, I noticed that the kitty's mouth was dirty. I said, well, what is that from? Well, because he continues to try and feed the kitty during lunchtime at the day center. So while I would not recommend giving a senior a pet if they don't already have one, the one thing that we can do at CDM is offer our clients some support through one of our programs that helps keep their pets' lives healthy, keep them with vet visits. If they need assistance with food, we can help with that. There's not a lot we can do. You see Rojo the llama on the left picture there, who unfortunately passed a couple years ago, but we can't bring our animals that used to come into the day centers to visit with our clients. So, but it is a very important thing that we can do for the elderly to help stave off isolation. Slide 9, please. So obviously with our clientele, there are lots of challenges. The first one that we look at is very right there up front, availability of broadband service. And I know this has been a topic amongst a number of you already, not just within our community, but within our state. And I, for example, have an issue with this. I live 2 blocks outside of the city limits of Woodland, and yet all of the broadband providers, the big names anyways, seem to think that I live in the hinterlands. And so getting broadband service, for example, today, I'm at my daughter's house so that I can get enough service so that I can conduct this panel with you. So that also is the same thing with our clients. They experience the same exact issues and frustrations about just having something available to them. The second thing, of course, is lack of technology. Technology is expensive. Not to mention extremely confusing. So a lot of our clients don't have smartphones. They don't have a tablet or even a computer. And then, of course, the last thing would be cognitive abilities. It's not lost on anybody that some of our clients just simply do not want to learn a new trick. They do not want to learn a new trick. And if they do learn a new trick, that may be forgotten very quickly. And a lot of them don't have somebody in the home to help them over and over again. So these are some big challenges that we are trying to deal with at CDM during this time that the adult day center has to be closed. So in closing, I'd like to just thank you again for having us in to speak about what CDM does and how we are dealing with the isolation, or trying to prevent the isolation within our clients. And I'd like to ask you to watch the video that we had prepared for our latest fundraiser. Please ignore the couple sentences within that talk about it, but it'll give you a great idea of what life was like before COVID at the Adult Day Center, and then after, once COVID hit and we had to close. So thank you, go ahead and roll the video.
Can I have you wait a minute?
Sure.
Dr. Melnick has arrived, and I wanted to give him an opportunity to provide us that big update on where we are with COVID in the county, public health. Well, you know that the first vaccines were given today at Peace Health. So, Dr. Melnick, tell us what's going on.
Great. Thank you. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
I did not put a PowerPoint together for you, and I apologize, but I can certainly talk without one. So for those of you who know me, so right now we're in a period of high COVID-19 activity in the community. So you know, back several months ago, I think we were considering, you know, 75 a rate of 75 cases per 100,000 over 14 days as being high. I think that's been changed to 200,000, but I'm sorry, 200 per 100,000 over 14 days. The most recent measure we have in Clark County is that we're at 451 per 100,000 over 14 days. That's the case rate that we're looking at. And if you recall back to what was it, June, when we applied for that variance to open up, we were about 19 per 100,000 over 14 days. Compare that to 451 per 100,000 over 14 days. And another metric that concerns me is, you know, we want 10% or fewer of our hospital beds to be occupied by COVID-19 patients. And we're at, the last I looked, we were at over 13% of that. So in Western Washington, there's a number we use to measure COVID-19 transmission. It's called the reproductive number. And that number is a number of cases that if somebody has a disease and they're contagious, the number of people that they transmit the infection to. And you want that number to be one. Over the last several weeks in Western Washington, it's been 1.4. I think in Eastern Washington, it's been 1.3. But that means each person with COVID-19 infects 1.4 other people. And you could think of it as compounded interest, but 1.4 times 1.4 times 1.4, you can see how the numbers increase. It's like getting 40% interest in a very short period of time and then compounding it. So in this case, it doesn't make you rich. It just makes a lot of cases of COVID-19. So we're still seeing exponential growth in the state. But, you know, just maybe a slightly optimistic take on this is that I've been really concerned about a post-Thanksgiving day bump, because we know in Clark County that after household contacts, the biggest risk that we're seeing is social gatherings, including small social gatherings. And, you know, post-Thanksgiving is a poster child for small social gatherings with people outside your household, where you eat and drink, you know, the masks come off, you might not be paying attention to physical distancing so much. So I thought the numbers would increase. The rate hasn't gone up a huge amount post-Thanksgiving yet. We're still a little bit too early to tell, but the downside is the rates were pretty high to begin with. So they haven't, you know, it's kind of been flat or increasing slightly in Clark County over the last few weeks, or last week or two, I should say. It was increasing rapidly before that. I'm still concerned about hospitalizations, and not only because of the beds being occupied, because you can add beds. What you can't add is healthcare workers. You can't continue to add doctors and nurses, as well as other, you know, respiratory therapists and other people who work in these clinical settings. So I'm really, you know, I have some, you know, pleading for people to, you know, continuing to practice physical distancing and mask wearing, be really careful over the upcoming holidays to avoid having contact with people outside your household. So I'd be asking people to do that. And I'd also ask, hopefully people on this call are, they've all gotten their flu shot, because the last thing, we're not in flu season yet. That's not that unusual, but the last thing we want to see is COVID-19 and influenza circulating at the same time. The other thing is, there are a number of questions that were submitted to me beforehand. Do I have a few minutes to talk about that? I know I'm talking pretty quickly. Is that okay?
Oh, please, please.
So one of the questions we were asked is the impact of COVID-19 on populations over 65, so including hospitalization and mortality rates. we're not tracking the demographics of hospitalization in Clark County because of privacy reasons. When you get to, even though it's 100, it's relatively small numbers, and we don't have the bandwidth to really follow people over time. We're really spending our resources on case identification, case and contact identification and outbreak response. But I can tell you that from mortality is 92% of the deaths in Clark County, and that's 120 deaths, are among people over 60. 77% are people over 70, and 53%, more than half of the deaths, 69 of the deaths, are among people who are over 80. That being said, the rate among the 60 plus population, the percentage of disease, the proportion of people infected by age is lower in older people than it is in younger people. So for example, the rate of among people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s is over 3,000 per 100,000. That's in, people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. They're getting COVID at a much higher rate than older people. Yet the deaths, so in 80 plus years, they're under 2,000 cases per 100,000. In people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, it's over 3,000 per 100,000. Yet the deaths in older people are much higher. So the deaths are way out of proportion to the incidence of the disease in those age groups. So I hope that's, I'm speaking pretty quickly, and I'm throwing numbers out there, so I hope this is understandable. But basically the bottom line is that illness and mortality are much higher in the older population from this particular disease. And the other concern I have is that as these young people get infected, and I'm saying people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are young people. Compared to me, they're young people. The virus doesn't care what age you are in terms of whether it's going to infect you. And as you know, we need the concern I have is if the disease spreads into the older population, especially over the holidays, we can see more hospitalization and more deaths. So. I want to make that pretty clear that we need to be careful. There is good news is that we've got two effective vaccines. One of them that's already been delivered to Peace Health, and I believe they started vaccinating people today. The vaccine is the Pfizer vaccine is, I believe, around 90% effective. The Moderna vaccine is around 95%. That's better than the flu vaccine, actually. And what we mean by effectiveness is the effectiveness in terms of preventing symptoms as well as preventing complications and death. It's going to take a while for the vaccine to be distributed. It's going to be several months to get the population immunized. Right now the priority populations are healthcare workers on the front lines who are working with COVID-19 patients. That includes first responders as well. And it also includes people with underlying conditions that put them at significant risk of complications. And it also includes residents and caregivers of long-term care facilities. So that's the first priority population to get the vaccine to, and we're starting on that now. And that will probably, given that we're going to have the vaccine, there's not a vaccine there to immunize all those people, but those are going to be the first group to get immunized. And hopefully as more vaccine becomes available in January, we'll be getting to the second round of the second priority group, and that will include older people, people over 65 who weren't in the first group. It'll include staff who work at K-12. It'll include people who are in congregate settings, like people in shelters, as well as people in the jail, including the people who provide services, health services there. And it will also include people with comorbid conditions. So hopefully that will be happening, shortly after we get this first group vaccinated. It's going to take several months. The other point I want to make is we know the vaccines are effective in preventing symptoms and adverse consequences. We don't know if they completely prevent infection. So it could be that you get the vaccine and you feel well, it's prevented symptoms, but you could still potentially be infected and contagious. So the bottom line is, we're probably looking at physical distancing and mask use for several more months. So I wanted to get that point across as well. We do have, we're working with our, we have a vaccine work group. We're working with our provider partners. And we're, one of the things we want to make sure as Clark County Public Health is that the priority populations get the vaccine first. And we want to make sure that people who are in those priority populations who might not have equal access, we want to have an equitable distribution, get the vaccine. We're certainly, we may, our partners will be distributing the vaccine, but if we need to set up points of dispensing for us to, with our partners to administer vaccine, we'll do that as well. I believe the vaccine is, going to be, it will be free. The feds are paying for the cost of the vaccine. But if there's any barriers to anybody, for example, if providers are charging fee to administer the vaccine, that may be another reason why we might set up some points of distribution to administer the vaccine for folks who can't afford that fee as well. So I want to mention that. People asked about the guidelines in regarding quarantine and isolation. The isolation guidelines haven't changed. It's 10 days since onset of symptoms, and beyond that, you're contagious from 2 days before the onset of symptoms to 10 days afterwards, and you're considered contagious for those additional 10 days and until your fever is gone, without fever-reducing medications, and your symptoms are getting better. That hasn't changed. What has changed is the guidelines for how long people who are close contacts of a case have to be quarantined for. The original recommendation was 14 days. It is still the recommendation by the CDC. That hasn't changed. But they provided an option for 10 days, as long as you remain symptom-free, and an option for 7 days if you remain symptom-free and have a test done within 48 hours of the seventh day, and that's negative. For high-risk situations like long-term care facilities, and if you're around, you're going to be around anybody who's at risk, for example, elderly people who are particularly at risk, I would really go with the CDC recommendation of 14 days in those high-risk situations. And certainly in congregate settings like long-term care facilities, I am still going with the CDC recommendation of 14 days. So I know that was a question that was asked, but it's contextual. It depends on the situation. There's a trade-off. People don't like to be in quarantine for 14 days, and some people may not cooperate if they know that it's going to be that long. But there is a slight trade-off in safety. There is a slight risk that you're going to develop symptoms and become contagious after 10 days, for example. So in a high-risk situation, I would still go with the 14 days. I'm talking really quickly. I hope this is okay. And I don't know how difficult or easy I am to follow. I don't know if there are other questions people have. I don't have data on the morbidity, mortality risks of isolation and quarantine for the older population, but there is, I did a literature review. There isn't a whole lot out there. Certainly we have concerns about that. I know that grief is an issue in older populations around COVID-19, but I got to be honest with you, the risk of the disease and morbidity from the mortality and mortality from the disease is considerable. So I think we still need to protect our older population from COVID-19, and we need to do whatever we can with other methods, whether they be virtual or otherwise, to keep those connections going. I think I answered most of the questions that were on there. I think I mentioned the outlook. I'm looking to see here how we preparing for today when the next pandemic hits. That's a great question. I think we were underprepared for this one, both locally, statewide, and nationally. That's my soapbox. I think public health is underfunded, both nationally, statewide, and locally. And I'm hoping, you know, that we learn our lessons from this and we invest in our public health system to do this. I think we've learned a lot from this pandemic, but we do know that that having an adequate public health infrastructure is important before the pandemic begins, so we can recognize and respond to it early. So I don't know if there's other questions that people had or I answered the concerns that most folks have.
I do have one follow-up, and I'm going to poll the commission to see if they have any follow-up. Our first presenter tonight was talking about technology and isolation, and definitely that kind of takes it down the line as to those who are in the priority groups, how do they find out that they're in the priority groups, and how do they find out when it's time to go and get a vaccination?
That's a really great question. I think we need, so there is a vaccine allocation plan. I think, I believe we have this information. If we haven't put it on our webpage, I'll work with our communications specialist to make sure we get that out there, but we definitely need to get that information out there. This first group, the priority group, are healthcare workers and first responders, as well as people who live and work in long-term care facilities. Those are the priority population. So that includes adult family homes, it includes assisted living facilities, it includes memory units, and it includes skilled nursing facilities and the people who work in those facilities. So we need to get that information out there so people are aware of that, but that's the first priority group. Certainly anybody, I believe anybody who's older, you know, in the second priority group, anybody who's over 65, I believe fits into that priority group as well as the other folks that I mentioned, but we'll get that information out there as well.
Right. Thank you. Tanya?
Thanks, Dr. Melnick. So I have a quick question. I recently listened to testimony from a leader with the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance on the efficacy of ivermectin for prophylaxis, so for frontline workers. I'm wondering, I don't see that at all anywhere in talked about in the media, or frankly, you know, with the CDC, or I have not had a chance to look at their website, but this was just published last week. Wanted to get your thoughts on that, not specific to treatment, but prophylaxis.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm glad you asked that question. Somebody just asked me about it recently, so I did a literature review on that. I got to tell you, the jury is out on ivermectin on this. The studies that have been done are, there's issues around their study design. And I think there's also concerns about the dose of ivermectin that might be effective. The adverse consequence, you know, side effects of ivermectin may outweigh any protection it might provide. So I'm not an expert on this. I've looked into it. I have looked into it and talked to and read the literature. The jury is out on ivermectin. So, and it hasn't been approved. It has not been approved for that purpose either, for good reason. We have a vaccine that, and in terms of prophylaxis, if we have a vaccine that's really safe and is 90 and 95% effective, I don't know why folks would want to use ivermectin for prophylaxis.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your comments on that. It feels like we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants as data comes in. So right. I was intrigued. I had not heard this. This was just published last week. And it does remain curious to me, you know, that we have a lot of great old drugs that and we're focused on like the new stuff instead. So I'm intrigued. So thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate it.
Ivermectin has been around for a while, just like hydroxychloroquine hasn't been around. But you know, I looked at the studies. Yeah, and there's issues around what dose you need for it to be effective. So the bottom line is I would not recommend it at all at this moment.
We have time for one more question. Anybody else from the commission?
And by the way, before people ask questions, I don't know if anybody had questions about the app that's out there as well. So I'm happy to, you're nodding your head. Okay. Can I mention the app?
Please.
So you might be aware that we're being so overwhelmed with cases, we don't have the bandwidth to do contact tracing. Right now, when we interview a case, we just give them information to get to their close contacts that they know of, to give them information about quarantine. And that's, you know, it's not just, and we are prioritizing the contact tracing when we have outbreaks in a facility, for example, but in general, we're not doing contact tracing. There's an app, and I believe it works for both Android as well as Apple phones, iPhones, that basically it's voluntary. You sign up, it's completely voluntary. It does not use GPS. So it doesn't follow you where you are. It doesn't say that you were, you know, it doesn't do your location. What it does do is it uses Bluetooth to identify phones that other people have who have also voluntarily signed up for this app. So if you sign up for the app, it will recognize other people who've signed up for the app when they're close. The phones will see each other. And they will know how long they were near each other for. And you know, the close contact is defined by being within 6 feet for 15 cumulative minutes. If somebody with that app becomes a case, and it's a notifiable condition, so we're notified, Clark County Public Health, just like every other health department, is notified when somebody becomes a case. We get a code number to give to that person who's got that app. They enter that code number into their app, and it will notify anybody who also has the app whose phone was in close contact with this person's phone, the case's phone, without giving any information about who the case is. It's totally private. You get, if you're a close contact to, let's say, John Doe, who also had the app, who's a case, it will tell you that you're a close contact. You've been a close contact. It won't say the name of the person. It'll just say you've been a close contact to somebody who is contagious with COVID-19. It doesn't track where you are. It's completely voluntary. And if we get enough people to sign up, and you know it's available in Washington, I would recommend that people sign up for that app.
Thank you. And I have on my iPhone. So
right. And if you behave yourself, hopefully you won't get a notification that you're.
My wife and I have a pretty tight, pretty small bubble that we work under. We're pretty trying to be safe as we can. thank you. I know we wanted to get you in for some information. You've given us a lot, but I think it's very important. And definitely we'll look forward to information on the website as far as that, getting that information out and available for those who would be candidates for being first in line.
Great, and we'll get that out to providers as well, so they know, you know, their patients who are first in line as well. Great.
Well, Dr. Melnick, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Have a good night, everybody, and be safe over the holidays.
Well, yes.
Thank you. Bye. Thank
you. Lisa, I'm going to call on you to show your video. I apologize for interrupting you, but definitely love to see your video and see if we have any questions as follow-up.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I just want to, this might be a little like old ninja movies where you see people's lips and the sound isn't quite matching up, just because I'm remoting in and it might just look a little glitchy. So I apologize. But I think you can hear it and you're going to see it well. And we can post it on our website so others can go and view it at their leisure as well. So here we go.
The stadium was founded in 1978 by three community volunteers who saw the need for caregiving services here in Clark County. Here at CDM, we provide in-home care, we provide an adult day services center, and we also have a program called Living with Dignity, where we're able to find solutions for people. We can buy a product or provide them with a service or get volunteers to do something that they normally wouldn't be able to have done. We've expanded the program to include offerings at the Adult Day Center, including the art therapy, music therapy, restorative exercise. For our in-home clients, the program allows us to fill gaps that can be the difference between them having to enter a facility or a nursing home and staying at home. We had to close our adult day center in March due to the coronavirus pandemic. And we've gone to all virtual activities in the adult day center. We felt it was really important to give them somewhere to go, even virtually, to connect with others and to have that sense of community.
That's you. It's lonesome here without you, but I'm sure glad I get to see you. I'm so pleased that so many clients are logging in and participating in the exercises, because we want to make sure that our clients maintain their stamina and even they interact with one another. I mean, those are skills you need to maintain. We just try to give a nice variety to get everyone stimulated and involved and let them know that we're here for them and they're loved. For a lot of folks, you know, they can't see their friends except online, and it's huge.
We want to get the day center back open. We want to be able to have the staff give our clients a hug and reassure them and give them a place to come and a family to be with. But for right now, virtual is the best we can do, and we're making the best of it. CDM's been here for 40 years, and we feel like the future is bright. We're going to keep building new solutions for people to stay in their own home even after this challenging year is over.
Ideally, there will be a vaccine, and we will all be together in the spring. If not, we'll continue like this, and we'll give each other virtual hugs and try to give emotional support and intellectual support and physical support to all our clients.
I'm just so proud that we've made it to 10 years of Symbol of Freedom, and I want to thank everybody for coming and for supporting our Living with Dignity program. We couldn't do the Living with Dignity program without donors and volunteers and our staff really working together and providing creative solutions for clients that really have no other option. Keeping them in their own home is the goal, and we're able to do things to make that happen through this program.
They know that we're here for them regardless of the pandemic, and that we're going to be here for them through the pandemic and when it's over, and we create a community and we're trying to keep it going.
Okay, thank you. So I was at your office pre-COVID, but it was an unfortunate event. I believe you might know Danny Euless, who is Danny and Saxon Dota Euless have been, and that was a celebration of life and involvement for Danny, which was not long before COVID came in, but you have amazing facilities there. And so I'm going to, because of the time, I'm going to see if there's any quick questions from the commission and then move us into our next presentation. So maybe a couple questions. Anybody have questions?
Yeah, Chuck, I have one.
Yes, Larry.
Yeah, Lisa, nice presentation.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, can you tell me the number of volunteers that participate and supporting a CDM?
Actually, you know, our numbers of volunteers that we would have would we don't have. I don't have a definite number with me right here, but I definitely am going to classify it under 75. We, with the type of work that we do, we have to be very particular with how many and what type of volunteers we bring in. So while we are always in need of volunteers, and those that do come and help us out are extremely passionate about this, about helping us out. So I'd love to be able to report our volunteer base up in the hundreds, but it just doesn't exist right now.
Yeah, it's a beautiful facility. I've been inside of it several times. So
yes, you have, Larry. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Tanya.
Just a quick question. I heard the funding was philanthropic. Is there any other funding that you get?
Yes, we get state funding as well. We probably over 80% of our clients come to us through Medicaid. And so on top of that, we also do private funding, private insurance, et cetera. So through COPES, Medicaid, other state funded methods, They help to support us. They pay for the services that we provide to the clients. They do not pay for, they don't pay one dime for any of the programs, the therapeutic programs that we offer to our clients in the day center. So none of the music therapy, none of the art therapy, animal therapy, all those things that help your brain to continue stay in motion and hopefully try and reconnect some of the pathways that have gone sideways, we have to support through philanthropic ways.
Okay. And it's just straight Medicaid. It's not duals, not Medicaid, Medicare. It sounds so much like a PACE program. So I'm just like, how is it different? Okay.
Yeah. Medicaid only. We've never been a Medicare provider.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm going to move us along to our next presenters, but please stand by because we probably have some more questions.
Thank you, Chuck. So I appreciate it.
Our next presenter is Ann Pollock, who's registered nurse with Columbia River Mental Health Services. So, Ann, take it away.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. I come, like Dr. Melnick, without slides and come more with a personal perspective with my day-to-day contacts with clients that we serve at Columbia River Mental Health. We're an agency that serves both Medicaid and Medicare population, everywhere from children to older adults. And I will speak only, I'm a phone screener amongst other things to as an entry person for people seeking mental health services. And so I will only, I will try to focus because I know we're running out of time on just my experience in talking with people who are entering services during this very trying time for all of us. I am seeing and talking to more and more people and more older people who for the first time are coming out with saying they're depressed, they're anxious. They think maybe they've been feeling that way for a long time, but they figured maybe that's just they're old and it comes with age. At 71 years old, I can say it doesn't come with age. It comes at this particular moment in time, as if time were linear, it comes in part due to the effects of the coronavirus. The isolation has been devastating to people. People that had managed their mental health without medication, therapy only, are now seeking medication. People that had stopped drinking for years, the increased consumption of alcohol in the elderly, they don't tend to go to street drugs, but have increased use of alcohol, and they're not happy. There is a lack of, we deal with an enormous number of people that are homeless or their home is their car. Technology is great if you have it, but if you don't, you're even more behind the eight ball. So I see increased depression, anxiety, secondary to the isolation, as well as the other social issues. My recommendation, if I were to be asked what it would be, is that we need to make sure when the next virus comes around that we have systems in place to deal with individuals who don't have access to internet. They're lucky. They consider themselves immensely lucky if they have a flip phone. And we really stress in this for what we can do because we're not active in the community as we once were. We make lots and lots of phone calls to people. Many of the individuals that we have will answer their phone. And just talking for a minute, I think, with people has been shown to be quite positive. People, the other interesting thing that I have noticed in talking to people, screening them, and then just talking to the regular clients that I talk to is people who used to say they liked being alone. They enjoyed isolation is what they said, but it wasn't as enforced. They're feeling the sense that the isolation they're going through now is enforced. And I spend a lot of time discussing with people relaxation techniques, more than one. There isn't one size that fits all. I do a lot of teaching on sleep hygiene. When we don't sleep well and we are isolated, it just gets worse. And the worse our sleep habits are, the worse our mental health is. So we kind of address things such as that. We recognize the need for isolation, but with every individual, we hope to empower them with the ability to more than just cope, but feel that at the end of the day, there was something good about the day. I could probably go on for much longer, but I do know I was glad to give up any of my 10 minutes to Dr. Melnick. That was such a great talk. So I'm just going to kind of end with the isolation on our seniors has been not devastating. I think that makes it sort of sounding like we're not ever going to get out of this. But I do believe that it has taken a toll on our seniors' mental health with increased depression, anxiety, and unfortunately with some easily accessible substances such as alcohol. People have returned to that. So that's about all I want. I'm willing to take questions. I'm probably better than that, than just speaking.
Thank you, Anne. Probably time for one or two questions. Anybody on the commission have any questions for Anne?
And it's okay if you don't. I won't take it as a bad sign.
Okay, I think you might want to stand by because I'm sure we'll have some follow-up after our next presentation. So our final presenters are Danelle Monson, Chief Medical Officer with United Healthcare, and Sheila Tallman, Vice President for External Affairs at United Health Group. Danelle and Sheila, please take it away.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me here. Actually, it's me and my colleague, Anne Schulze, who's here. And looks like we're a little bit pressed for time, so I will do my very best to do this as quickly as I can. I first want to thank you all for the opportunity for being here and to be part of your community. I've learned a lot about the Commission for Aging from Jackie and Tanya, and I'm so grateful. Also, I trained at OHSU, and so I have a personal connection to the community because my first 5 years through past residency, I actually, after residency, I practiced in the Salmon Creek neighborhood. And so I still have a lot of friends and colleagues who live in that area. In fact, somebody who gave me a tiny little tree, a fig tree, a baby, is pretty darn big in my front yard now, and I have about 3 figs that we got this year. So very happy to be here. Jackie, you can switch to the next slide. So I wanted to talk about social isolation and social needs in the context of what the insurance company can actually do. Really, in thinking about that, what we wanted to be able to do is to really support in the context of COVID our patients. I wanted to be able to support our providers and thereby supporting our community. There's a lot of information that I think in the interest of time, I won't go through in great detail, except to really highlight that we supported our providers by accelerating their payments. So many providers were doing financially very poorly. We want our patients to have access to care and not have cost be a barrier. So we waived all our cost sharing, meaning copays, for any members who need sort of COVID diagnosis and treatment. We provide unlimited telehealth visits at no cost. There are multiple ways that we've provided funding in terms of assistance for the community. Additionally, we know that social isolation can create mental health concerns, and so we've opened free access to our mental health mobile apps and 24/7 emotional support. We were part of the program that was developed and tested by the FDA for the COVID-19 swab. That program actually happened in Washington. And we partnered with the Morehouse School of Medicine to be able to really fund research about COVID in patients with sickle cell trait. You can move to the next slide, Jackie. Won't belabor this too much at this point, again, in the interest of time, but know that what we've wanted is to really, what we understand is that health and needs, home, being able to have a home, being able to have food, these are go hand in hand with health, and to that, we've provided a lot of support in the community, Meals on Wheels, in terms of funding and support. You can move to the next slide, Jackie. We have also done our very best to support organizations whose mission we believe in. Dr. Milne talked about the CDC. We've provided and pledged $2 million in support to that. American Nurses Foundation, we've pledged $1 million to support our frontline workers. And then also just the other day, just got getting questions from community providers needing more PPE. And so we have been able to provide assistance to Direct Relief Fund. And after this, if there are questions about any of these specifics, I can definitely speak more to that. Jackie, you can go to the next slide. So in terms of the numbers, I really want to say that what we've been able to do is over 10,000 members with social determinants of health needs were identified in Washington State alone. Over 5,000 members were identified with unique needs, and really that translated to about $3.2 million in support. And you know, at the bottom there, again, at this slide can be available to everybody. You can see sort of what that support looked like. Next slide. And then lastly, I won't go through all my slides because I see that we're pressed for time, but what I really want to talk about is our House Calls program. This is a free program for all our Medicare Advantage members. We provide a in-home free visit at no cost. The goal of our program is to empower a member to really understand their own health. We come to the home, we look inside the fridge, we help to patch the member with social needs that are available as part of their plan benefits. We assess social determinants of health needs, and we refer in any way we can to resources that are available there in the community. And during the in light of COVID, we have this available through as a telehealth opportunity as well. So with that, I will stop, and in the interest of time, and happy to take any questions in terms of what we're able to do.
Thank you, Danielle. I have one kind of following up from the Dr. Melnick's talking about the notifications. How, and I'm not sure how you would be involved with this, but how is United Healthcare involved in getting the notifications out for the availability of vaccines and helping to organize the actual vaccine, the shots? And
thank you for that question, Chuck. So I would say in terms of the vaccination, the specifics are still being worked out, but what our commitment is a $0 copay for all our members associated with the vaccine. We do not want any members to not get that vaccine because of cost. We will cover that cost.
Yes, and I heard from Dr. Melnick that sounded like that was that actual vaccination cost was one of the considerations that people who are on low income or fixed incomes have a concern about that. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, $35 for a vaccine, that can be expensive for many people. And so again, that is our commitment to providing access to care and good care.
All right, I'm going to see if any of my fellow commissioners have any questions. Just kind of jump in because I'm having to check, change windows to see if there's any hands up.
I just had an observation, Dr. Monsoon. I, in one of my former careers, I was a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. And in the program that I was in, we made home visits to the homes of older adults because that was the population we were serving. And it's exactly what you said. What you see in the home is so maybe so different than what presents at a clinic visit. And I can remember asking my clients, not tell me about your medications, but show me your medications. And oftentimes after that, I would have a tour of the house because the medications were everywhere. So I love this house call program that you have. I think it's just so valuable. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, do you know if the Southwest Washington hospitals are adequately subsidized for PPE? Do they have the equipment they need?
So great comment. Thank you so much, Ms. Wheeler. So first of all, in terms of the house calls program, yeah, I think there's a huge difference to walk into a member's house and see the needs that are there. And we have so much positive feedback from our members. In fact, if they get a house calls program 1 year, the rates of them having it the following year are over 90%. And you know, being a caregiver, how important it is to really meet members where they have needs. In terms of the PPE, I don't have the specifics for you, but it has not been escalated to me in the last few months. It was much more of an issue earlier on, but at this point, it has not been so much of an issue. It's been more of a problem in Eastern Washington and the Spokane area, but not so much in our Washington Southwest community.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
This is Tanya. Oh, I have one quick comment. So Dr. Monson, thank you. As always, great to see you. Great presentation. And, you know, just for the commission members, Dr. Monson and I worked together while I was at United, and we got our MBA together from OHSU. And I wanted to highlight the importance. I think I say it in every meeting, public-private partnership. We can do so much more when we do it together. And House Calls is a great example of a program that actually incorporates a lot of things that are available in the community, as Dr. Monson was mentioning. And United's not the only health plan that's doing things like this. So I just think it's really important that as we move forward and we're figuring out how do we truly have a positive impact within Clark County specifically, broaden our minds to look at every entity that's out there, you know, the nonprofits and CBOs. So I wanted just to make that comment. And thank you, Danelli. Great presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Tanya. And, you know, as you kind of continue to on the pilot that you talked about in terms of telehealth and Medicare Advantage, you know, we want to be a partner in any sort of activity that's going to support Clark County in terms of health. And so please keep us posted into how we can be helpful to you.
Thank you. I'm going to now present an opportunity for those attending from the community to offer any questions. Please raise your hand, and the same rules apply or same process applies as before. If you want to raise your hand, Jackie or Jenna will let you in, and you can definitely ask questions of any of the presenters or provide comments. So, do we have any hands? I'm not seeing any hands. All right. Going once, going twice. Okay, so thank you. Any follow-up questions from the commission before we thank our presenters for some great presentations? Well, on behalf of my fellow commissioners, I'd like to thank all of our presenters tonight. And Dr. Melnick, it was very timely to have all of this information as it's been first and foremost in a lot of our discussions over the last couple of months. So thank you very much. Like to ask our commissioners to thank our presenters tonight. I guess however you want to clap and acknowledge and applaud. So I'd like to have a few minutes while everything's fresh. Are there anything that stands out, anything that we want to follow up or bring to our mini retreat next month? Anything that sticks in your mind? We got so much. Linda.
As you can tell, I can't figure out how to raise my hand on that thing. I was a little bit surprised about that it appears that Dr. Melnick stated there is a bit of lack of organization or could not give a really great answer to the fact that we have the priority down and who's getting the vaccine. However, who's in charge? Who's on first kind of thing? Who's in charge of it? And so it doesn't give you a comfortable feeling in terms of how is the next group going to be notified? Who's going to be missed? That was kind of that's a big question. And maybe I misunderstood it, but that's kind of what I got from it. And I also, one other thing is that I see that at CDM with great presentation, everyone had a great presentation, that the problems that we're having with adults with special needs or in adults that are aging are very similar to the problems we're having with teaching children at virtually. They cannot always, I've sat at many homes help and have seen how parents are trying, they're not connecting. It's kind of like how we connect to our meeting here. You know, we have a little problem sometimes, or, you know, there's a lot of similarities in terms of lack of internet coverage, lack of skill, lack of equipment, all of that. And it just seems like a lot of the things that we need to do for our aging population, we really need to do for the little ones as well. So that just came to my mind. Thanks.
Thank you. Franklin?
First of all the presentations were really informative and very insightful. One of the things that I was thinking about before Dr. Melnick's presentation, and now I'm even more concerned about, follow up a little bit on the previous comment. I was concerned about how they're doing the tracking and notifying people when it's time to come and get their second shot. Mm-hmm. And also, what are the challenges of dealing with people that are homeless that may not have all the communication options that other people have? And I was just thinking of this in terms of, is there an aspect in our aging readiness plan for pandemic response impacts on our aging community? And is this a time to maybe look at that and somewhere down the road, get some people in to tell us after they've gone through a wave of these vaccines, what some of the problems or challenges were so that we can try and position our community in the future for a better response to the next pandemic, which we know is going to happen.
So Jackie, I kind of turn to you as kind of the continuity all the way back. I don't recall a discussion in the aging readiness plan about pandemic response.
No, there.
So it might be something that we put on the table next month as to, are there things that maybe we should put in our work plan? And I know we talked about it in our work session a little bit about pandemic response and how that might need to get factored into future updates because there will be more pandemics. And, we went through one, 10 years ago? And then we went through one 5 years before that. It's not like we go through these things every 100 years. We go through these things every half a generation. I think the other question was about notification, and I know Dr. Melnick was going to check on the website to find out what they had about notification. So it might be worth that. That might be a follow-up item for more requests for more information. Jackie, what is that? I also found, I mentioned earlier that my wife is doing caregiving for a 72-year-old woman from church, and she doesn't have United Healthcare. She has another provider, which shall go nameless, but that welfare, or that United, that healthcare program does provide in-home visits for 30 minutes a week by somebody who basically is there to do cleaning and other in-home activities. It does provide a little bit of human contact, but that's 30 minutes a week. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to see United Healthcare is doing that 45 to 60 minute in-home visits. I think that's a big bonus to help offset that isolation. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, one of the things that I heard, and this is kind of a follow-up from Linda, what I heard from Linda and then some of our presenters tonight was, again, that issue about having access to the internet. And I'm wondering if we could explore that a little bit at our next meeting, and if there's anything we can do as a commission to reach out to or support efforts to get more broadband out into the communities. It is a problem for both older adults and for, again, as Linda was pointing out, families.
That's a good point. I know that there, and we've been talking about seeing if there are community assessments on different areas, and infrastructure should be one of those areas that we have. And I know that I've heard through a variety of groups like Columbia River Economic Development Council and others of considerations of infrastructure inventories. I don't know where they are, but knowing that with the change in administration and hearing wording about or some rumors about an infrastructure package that might actually happen next year at the federal level, I think it's definitely worth seeing if there's a way to centralize at least Southwest Washington's asks when it comes to that type of broadband infrastructure. Anybody else?
No, just one comment, Chuck. Something I'm really not clear on is life after a vaccination. In other words, once our seniors get vaccinated and so forth, does this allow them to participate as volunteers to help other organizations, which some have been doing? I don't think that's real clear yet, that impact where they can get out and contribute to the community, which some of them want to do. So that's something we ought to look at and explore and make sure that's clear and what those directions are.
Good point. I think what also will see if there's continued monitoring, but you know, we're in day three of a national vaccination program, so we got a long ways to go. And you know, I know that they've had somebody who had a negative reaction today, but it was like one of three out of thousands and thousands of people that have had a negative reaction to the vaccine. So we definitely need more time, but it would be nice to know if there's that feedback once we've had, say, a month into this process, if we can see some tendencies like that. You know, can your elderly get out and start volunteering or be part of the community? Anybody else? I think we've gone way over, so. We've have a lot to digest tonight, but a lot of good information. And again, thank you to all who have presented and give us information. Thank you to my fellow commissioners for the great dialogue that we've had tonight. I think we are probably ready to adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Or should I just make an executive?
Yes. So moved.
Yes, and second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, staff. Thank you very much, those from the community who joined us. And thank you very much to our presenters and my fellow commissioners. We will, in fact, I'll see some of you next month. Have a great Christmas and a great New Year.